2 weeks ago, I had those special open lines on Wednesday as we vented a little bit. You know, as part of an effort for us to really, you know, stand up and start telling people, hey, we've had enough of this. We want to take our country back. And so we shall do tonight with our guest, Aaron Russo. Born in Brooklyn, raised on Long Island, producer Aaron Russo has been a driving force in the music business, where Aaron helped create the careers of many legendary performers such as Led Zeppelin and promoted some of the 60s most successful rock acts, including The Who, Janis Joplin, The Grateful Dead, and Jefferson Airplane. When Russo turned to the producing of feature films, his production of The Rose introduced Bette Midler to the motion picture audiences. Midler received an Academy Award nomination as the Best Actress. The Rose is considered by many to be a classic rock and roll film. Russo also produced Trading Places, starring Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd. Over the past years, Russo has received numerous awards for his achievements. In January of 2004, he declared his candidacy for the Libertarian Party's nomination for President of the United States. At the convention in May, he won the first two ballots, but not a majority. He was defeated on the third and final ballot. He then channeled his energy into writing, directing the film America from Freedom to Fascism. He's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hello, Aaron. How are you?
Hey, I'm very happy. I'm glad to be here. Thank you very much.
Lots of response when we put on our website that you were going to be our guest. I mean, people have been flooding me with congratulatory emails already, and I haven't even talked with you yet.
Is that right? Did that really happen
yet?
Yeah,
honest to God.
That's great. That's great news. I'm happy to hear that. I think that my movie and my website is getting a tremendous amount of attention about this movie. As a matter of fact, we've had over 450,000, maybe 500,000 now, people go on the site and stream the movie. You know, it's not the movie, but the trailer.
Good for you. You know, and I'm in L.A. too, so you and I have to get together one day.
My pleasure, okay. Sure.
I want to get your reaction, Aaron, before we get into all the business at hand here. I want to get your reaction to the president's immigration speech tonight, and illegal immigration speech tonight, and, you know, just this episode. Because I continue to think this is a push for a North American country, one. But what do you think about all this?
Well, to be honest, I'm leaving for France tomorrow, and I was very busy packing up tonight and getting myself ready to go. So I didn't hear his speech tonight particularly, but I will say that his policies towards immigration have been horrible, and there's no question that in America that we must have border control and protect our borders from invasions. You know, a lot of people tell me that they think that the illegal immigrants should be given citizenship, and I really think that would be a horrible mistake, because the fact is that America is there's a philosophy that underlies America, that underlies our Constitution, freedom of the individual, Americans being sovereign citizens above the government being the servant of the people. And when immigrants come here illegally, and then they're made citizens and they can vote, they're going to change the very nature of what made America a great country, because they've been brought up in countries where they don't have those standards.
That's right.
And they don't understand it. And so to just let people come in here and become citizens and destroy the essence of what America's about would be a terrible thing. And personally, my own point of view is, and I know I'm right about this, is that the people that want this to happen are the people who want a one-world government, a one-world order. They want a world without borders.
That's right.
And the American government is listening to them.
Absolutely. And you know, I don't want people to assume that because we're opposed to illegal immigration, that we hate people or we want harm to come to people.
No.
I mean, you know, I wish that as they stayed in their own countries, in their own cities, in their own towns, I wish there was a way that we could, you know, generate a good standard of living for everybody on this planet so they could be happy.
Well, the fact is that because you don't believe in illegal immigration doesn't mean you're a bigot or a racist. I happen to love people. My whole nature is one of being very generous. I love people. I'm very friendly. I like to laugh. You know, it's not about that. It's about preserving the American way of life and making sure that our Constitution and what makes America a great nation is preserved. That's what it's about.
Absolutely.
That's the positive. It's not about disliking anybody else. They just use that. That's used as an argument to make you feel guilty or politically incorrect.
You know, this reminds me, Aaron, this is a crazy analogy, but you lend somebody some money, and then a month goes by, and 2 months go by, and a year goes by, and, you know, you kind of want to get paid back. So you go up to the person you lent the money to, and you said, hey, you know, do you think I can get paid? And he attacks you for asking him.
I've actually had that happen to me as well. Okay, so I totally get that analogy. You know, I totally understand that. But, the fact is that, you know, America has been known for immigration, and you keep hearing people say that, well, your family were immigrants when they came here, and they use that against you. But the difference is, When the immigrants came here initially and originally, there was no social welfare. You know, everybody didn't have to support everybody else like they have to do today. Now you come to this country and you can live off other people, and that's wrong. And when the immigrants first came here, they came here to work, to make a living. They didn't live off other people. There wasn't welfare, you know. And so there's a very, very big difference between then and today.
When my grandfather came here from, and my two grandfathers came here from the old country, I mean, one was a shoe manufacturer and cobbler. The other worked in the furniture business and ended up owning his own furniture company in Boston, in that area. I mean, these guys started with nothing. In those stories are everywhere. A lot of the immigrants who came into this country in the 20s, especially, they didn't have a lot, but they worked hard, they were dedicated, and sure, a lot of them stayed within their own small communities, you know, where you had Little Italy and a little Middle Eastern. But you know what? These people cared about their families, they cared about people, they cared about America. Right. And, you know, they went to war for America.
Well, they came, see, that when the old immigrants came here to get away from oppression overseas. They came here to be free and find opportunity. A lot of the people coming here today are coming here to get quick money to send back home.
True.
They're not coming here to make a life here necessarily, even though some of them are. You know, and it's just a whole different ballgame. And I have no problem with immigration, as long as it's legal immigration, as long as people come here and learn the essence of the Constitution and what it's really about and the philosophy of what made America a great nation. And unfortunately, it's not only the immigrants that should learn that. It's a lot of the citizens of America, the kids going to school. They're not taught that anymore either.
Well, and I blame these huge manufacturing corporations, Aaron, who have left American jobs here to squander. And then they've set up shop and plants in Mexico where the labor is just notoriously cheap. And, I mean, those workers are trying to get out of there to come here to make money.
Right. Well, the interesting thing about that is you have to take that back to its origination, you know, to how that came to be. I mean, I think most of the ills of this country, particularly the immigration and what you're talking about now, the loss of jobs, you know, really the blame for that and the fault for that lies on the Federal Reserve System and the banking community in this country. You know, the Federal Reserve System creates money out of thin air. And that is a definition of inflation. Many people think inflation is rising prices. That's not correct. Inflation is the printing of currency. And the more currency they print, the more inflation they create, then that creates higher prices. Higher prices are a symptom of the inflation. So because the Federal Reserve System has created this massive inflation, which they get into the economy through borrowing, so they create the inflation, and they also create more debt at the same time. And so what's happened is that because of this massive inflation, the price of everything in America has gone up. And to keep pace with that, the American worker had to start making higher wages to keep up with the inflation. And so as they started making higher wages, the corporation said, well, they're making too much money. Let's go overseas and get cheaper labor,
where we could sell our goods for almost the same as we're selling them now.
Exactly. Well, exactly. And we'll have cheaper labor at the same time. So then they go overseas, and they create manufacturing overseas. And the American worker gets fired. He's out of a job or has to take a cheap service job instead. Now everything is being made overseas. Now we have to buy those goods. So now we buy them from overseas, and that means our dollars end up overseas. We get the goods, and our dollars go over there. Now that means all these foreign countries are now holding our dollars. And then they take our dollars, and they come back, and they start buying American companies with it. You see?
Well, I'm also making a prediction here, Aaron, that if the Iranians switch from the dollar to euros for their oil, and they continue to, apparently they're flooding the Iraqi market with weapons now, I have found out, something's going to happen there, and that's going to happen soon.
Well, I don't doubt that something's going to happen, but I don't think that it's going to be up to the Iranians. I think America is so overshot her load already. There's so much unfunded liabilities in this country. There's so much debt in this country. And the only way you can pay for the debt is to create more money. So the only way to pay for the old debt is to create new debt.
Well, what happened to the old dollar gold, dollar currency here? What happened to that?
Well, what happened to that is real simple. You know, first in August 15th of 1971, President Nixon stopped all other countries who held dollars overseas from taking the gold from America. So he cut off the gold standard. He cut off the gold supply. Now you had a series of all countries in the world making paper money out of nothing. But then the Federal Reserve has taken the gold that was in Fort Knox that belongs to the American people, the wealth of the nation, the real wealth.
True.
And they've taken the gold as collateral for the dollars they print out of thin air. You see,
who gave them the right to do that?
Thank you. Thank you, not the American people, and the Republicans and the Democrats in office have allowed that, and the Treasury Department. So these guys, they print money out of thin air, a piece of paper that costs 2 cents to make, or they just use computer chips now. They don't even spend the 2 cents anymore, and they create billions and trillions of dollars out of nothing, and they said to the government, well, we're going to take the American gold as collateral for all this paper we're printing.
Oh, and now at $700-plus dollars an ounce, that's worth a pretty penny, isn't it?
Well, sure, it's worth more than the $700 an ounce. It's worth thousands of dollars an ounce, ultimately, because the more they print, the more the price of gold is going to go higher in regards to dollars, as it relates to a dollar. I mean, the very fact is they've taken the real wealth of the nation in return for a piece of paper that they stick us with. They get the gold, and we get the paper and the computer chips.
What a great deal they cut.
I would say
for themselves.
So. I say it's the biggest swindle ever in the history of this country.
Yeah, but there's got to be a lot of people behind it, Aaron. A lot of people have profited off of this one.
Well, of course they have. I mean, in 1913, the Federal Reserve was established without a constitutional amendment, so it's completely illegal. The Constitution says very clearly only Congress can issue money and determine the value thereof. And Congress can't give that to any other agency, you know, or a private bank like the Federal Reserve is.
Well, how come nobody challenges that?
Well, now or then.
I mean now. I mean,
I am challenging it. That's why I made the movie From Freedom, America, Freedom to Fascism.
Okay, but what about litigation? And what about someone saying, hey, you know, there is no law here. What's going on? Nobody does that. I mean, we'll get into the IRS as well. There are a lot of people who don't think that ever has become law, for example.
The income tax on your labor cannot be law. I mean, it's impossible for it to be law. When I started making the movie America, Freedom to Fascism, what happened was I started out because I kept hearing rumors over the years that there was no law. I heard it over and over and over again. So I said, you know, that's an interesting thing to find out. It might make an interesting movie. Let me get into that, you know, because I wanted to make movies. You know, I had all these movie-making skills from the past, and I wanted to make a movie about politics, about this country, because I'm very tired of what's happened to this country. You know, we're heading into a complete totalitarian police state. It's fascist, and fascism means the cooperation of big government and big institutions to suppress the people.
And control.
And control, yeah. That was Mussolini's definition of fascism, and that's what we have here today. So I decided to make this movie not about that at the time, but just about the IRS and was there a law. And I called the IRS on the phone. I said, I'm Aaron Russo, and I'm an award-winning film producer, and I'm interested in making a movie about the tax on labor, and is there a law? And you know, can I interview some people? And they said, no, we won't, you know, we're not going to cooperate. And I thought that was kind of odd, honestly, because I would think if there was a law, it would be a very simple thing to do.
And defend.
And defend, yeah, I mean, when they just show me the law, it's real simple. But instead, they sent me to some one of their websites with all the stuff on it. But there was never a law, you know, and it didn't make sense to me. And then there was this group of people, an organization called We the People Foundation, that was going to be marching in Washington and serving the IRS with a lawsuit for them to show where the law was. So I said, oh, that's interesting. Let me get some cameras down there, and I'll shoot this march. And if I like the footage and I think there's something here, I'll continue to make the documentary. And so we went down there. We shot some footage. We shot them serving the IRS with the papers. And the more I spoke to the IRS, the more convinced I became that there's something wrong here because they're not showing the law. Why? And so in speaking to them, there was this very nice gentleman named Anthony Burke, who I spoke to, who was very helpful, and he arranged for me to meet one of the ex-IRS commissioners named Sheldon Cohen. And Sheldon was the commissioner for many years, and he actually was very instrumental in writing the tax code, and he was also chief counsel to the IRS.
Okay.
So very respectable.
Sure.
You know, he knows his stuff, right?
Got the credentials.
Exactly. So I sat down in an interview with him, and it's all in the film. And ultimately, you know, I asked him some questions. Why is the tax code say it's voluntary, you know, not mandatory? And I asked him questions about the Fifth Amendment, you know, why the Fifth Amendment says you don't have to do anything to incriminate yourself. And he said that doesn't, you know, when you sign your tax 1040, you're not incriminating yourself. And I would say, but you can go to jail for it. So obviously you're incriminating yourself, you know. And we got into this whole discussion. And finally it came down to, you know, he said, look, we have the authorization to impose this tax because of the 16th Amendment, the income tax amendment.
Then you were waiting for that to come up.
Yes. And he says, and I say, the 16th Amendment, okay, let's examine that a little more clearly. And I said, the 16th Amendment, first of all, was never even ratified by the states, okay? That's the first thing. But we don't even use that. That doesn't even matter, okay? But that's just a fact.
All right.
It was never ratified. But let's assume it was ratified, okay? Now, I say, well, the 16th Amendment was in 1913. That was the year it was ratified. In 1916... to 1923, there were 8 different Supreme Court decisions that said the 16th Amendment did not allow you to tax the labor of the people.
That's interesting.
Okay, so if the 16th Amendment said you can't tax, if the 8 Supreme Court decisions said you can't tax the labor of the people, how is the IRS?
Oh, I'm there.
What was that?
You know what? Aaron, it happens every time I have a controversial guest on.
No kidding.
Something happens somewhere.
I'm glad to know I'm controversial.
Someone plays around. Unbelievable. Hey, stay with us. We got a commercial break. We'll be right back with you, all right? Aaron Russo, our guest. Happens all the time. Aaron, let's talk before we get back into all of this. Tell us a little bit about you and your show business career. That's fascinating.
Well, I'd just like to finish the point we were making before the break.
Okay.
There was a very important point we were on, and we never got a chance to finish it. So the point was that 1913, the 16th Amendment was ratified, and they said that was the law that allowed the government to tax the labor of the people. It was up until that point you couldn't tax labor and people, all right? Because it was considered that labor was your private property, you owned your labor, and if you worked for somebody and they gave you something in return, it was an exchange.
All right.
It wasn't a profit, it wasn't a gain, it was an exchange. So when I pointed that out to the commissioner, and I said, well, you say the 16th Amendment is what authorized it, which was in 1913, but yet in 1916 through 1923, 8 different Supreme Court decisions said that the government couldn't tax the labor of the people and that the 16th Amendment did not give them that authority. Right? How much clearer can it be?
So what happened?
So what does the IRS commissioner say to me? And this is in the movie. He says to me, the 16th Amendment is inapplicable to the IRS. I mean, the Supreme Court decisions are inapplicable to the IRS.
Oh, really?
As if they're above the law. Okay? So that means they're using force. So ultimately, it's no different than a criminal protection racket, where somebody walks into your store, says, listen, I want $2,000 a month, and you're not going to get hurt.
Yeah, and if you don't give them the money, you got a problem.
Right. So there is as from everything that I've learned, it's impossible for there to be a law because the Supreme Court said they can't do this. Okay? And then when you actually go look for a statute written by Congress that allows that in defiance of the Supreme Court decisions, there is no statute.
But then you have people like old Irwin Schiff, Aaron, who get convicted and sentenced on 13 counts. I mean, somewhere along the line, you would have thought they'd say to him, Irwin, you're right.
Well, but here's the thing. Here's what happens. So I said to the commissioner in the movie, I say, well, then if that's the case, how can lower courts be putting people in jail when the Supreme Court said they don't have to pay the tax? How does that happen? And then I go ahead and I show how it happens. What happens is, as in the case of Irwin Schiff, which is in the movie, Irwin Schiff was trying to prove to the jury that there was no law, and he was trying to make his point.
Right.
Okay? And here's a quote from the judge, right out of the transcript. Okay? The judge, Judge Kent Dawson, federal judge, says to Irwin Schiff in court, and this is the quote, I will not allow the law in my courtroom.
I will not allow the law in my courtroom.
Exactly. I will not allow the law. Now, think about that. Just think about that. Okay, there's a judge railroading an American citizen. Okay, it's a farce. It's a joke.
I will not allow the law in my courtroom.
And then when Irwin Schiff went to say what the Supreme Court said, the judge, Kent Dawson, says, irrelevant, denied. You mean the Supreme Court's irrelevant? Irrelevant, denied. And does not allow Irwin to bring up Supreme Court decisions. So what happens is that in the lower courts are not following the Supreme Court decisions as they're obligated to do. Of course, they're in cahoots with the IRS. And it's a scam. There is no law. Now, personally, I don't care whether people pay taxes or not, income tax or not. That's their business. Okay? What I do care about is that there are people being put in jail, and that the IRS is a symptom of the overall bigger police state that's happening in America.
And as you know, when they went to try to get some criminals, the easiest way to get them was on tax evasion,
exactly.
They said.
Exactly. But there is no law. I mean, the IRS has not been able to show me the law. We have a woman, a juror in the movie named Marcy Brooks, a brilliant woman. And I say to her, well, you said on the jury, how come? Because many people have been found innocent, by the way. You have to know that. You know, I show many.
Yeah, but they don't get publicized too well, Aaron. Only the convictions.
Exactly. Well, of course. But they're publicized in my movie. And we show the people who have won. And the reason they won is because the judges have allowed them to show there was no law. You see, and once the jury sees there's no law,
then let them go.
They can't convict. But there's never any publicity about it, because we all know the media is controlled by the big institutions. And the big institutions and the big government work together to suppress the people. And that's fascism. And that's what we have here in America today. We're living in a fascist country, and it has to be stopped. We need to get together as people. We need to stop being polarized, stop being good Democrats, stop being good Republicans, and start being good Americans. That's what the people there have to do. If they want to save their lives and save their future and their freedoms, you got to get organized now.
What would you recommend that, I guess, government do to replace revenue? Maybe go to a sales tax
tax? One of the things you have to understand is that the money you pay in taxes, the income tax, mostly goes to pay the interest on the debt. It doesn't go for infrastructure like people think. Like people say, what are you going to do about schools if you don't pay an income tax? Well, schools are paid for by local property tax.
Absolutely. This government's borrowing $2 billion a day.
Yeah. You want to build roads, they say. Well, the gas and tax lien pays for the roads. You want to have a defense. Well, the excise taxes and the corporate taxes pay for the defense. I mean, The money you pay in income tax, for the most part, just goes to pay the interest on the debt. And we have interest on the debt because we have a Federal Reserve system. If you got rid of the Federal Reserve system, all that interest on the debt would be gone.
Isn't that what Kennedy wanted to do?
Well, that's what I'm told. You know, I saw his executive order, I think it was 1110, something like that. And, you know, where it said he wanted to make silver currency again. And I didn't put it in the movie because I wasn't sure about his intentions as I read it. I wasn't clear about it. And so I didn't go into that in the movie, you know. But also, you know, all four presidents who were assassinated, you know, were against the Federal Reserve, you know, against central banks. I mean, people have to understand that we say America is the greatest capitalistic country in the world. But what people don't really understand is that the Federal Reserve System is a central bank. That is one of the major planks of the Communist Manifesto, central planning. How can you say we're a capitalistic country when you have a central bank? That's right out of the Communist Manifesto, a graduated income tax. It's right out of the Communist Manifesto.
And they get together every month and set interest rates.
Yeah, as if, you know, they have this power. So how can capitalist the country means you have laissez-faire, you're free to do as you wish. You have a central bank deciding everything for you here. Ben Bernanke, you want him deciding how you live your life? Or Alan Greenspan? What a joke. You know, America, and it's the Federal Reserve, because they print all this money, they control our government. They control the government. All the big corporations feed on the nipple of the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve gives them money at very low interest rates. Then they go out and charge more money on it. And it's this, and you have this fascist big institutions and big government controlling the people here. And it's time the people woke up and said, I don't want this anymore, and shut down the Federal Reserve system.
All right, let's talk here, and in case this ever happens,
yes.
if the Federal Reserve system is shut down,
yes.
Give me a for instance. How's this going to work?
Well, my point of view would be very simple. The Federal Reserve would stop making money for this country. The government would make the money interest-free. There'd be no more interest to pay on it. Okay, and you'd be backing with gold.
All right, so
when you shut the Federal Reserve down, you take back all the gold that they've stolen from us.
We'd still have our banks, I guess?
Of course you'd have your banks.
All
nothing
right.
wrong with banks. Banks could do what they want to do. There's no problem with a bank, you know, but they couldn't be charging usurious interest rates. You know, like, look what they just did with the bankruptcy laws. You know, they made bankruptcy much more difficult on the American people by passing these really stringent laws, yet they allowed the banks to charge 25% and 30% interest rates. You know, it's slavery.
Robbery.
It's slavery of the people. They want to turn the people into serfs. And now they're starting to talk about RFID chips. They're implanting chips in people like a homing device. By May 2008, you have to have a national ID card with a reader component on it, and that reader component's going to be the RFID chip, radio frequency identification. I'm telling you, you're heading into a one-world government very quickly, because we have a central bank, a Federal Reserve System.
And what happens when they do away with your cash and you're stuck with your ATM machine?
Well, what's going to happen is that all money is going to be digitized. And when your money is digitized, and if they put that chip in you, which everybody says, well, I'm not going to take a chip. Well, let me tell you something, buddy. If you can't have any money without the chip, and you can't start your computer without the chip, and you can't do a million things without your chip, you're going to start taking it.
You're going to get stuck with it. You know, it's like your Social Security number. Right? You know, whether you are opposed to it or not, you know, you go into an employer. I'm not talking about people who make them up, by the way, these numbers.
I understand.
Yeah.
They force you to have one.
Absolutely.
And if you remember what they said originally, the Social Security card said not to be used for identification. Right on the card. Not to be used for ID. Doesn't say that anymore. Because they do things very slowly. So you don't pay attention, you don't notice the changes. It's the old frog in the pot theory. You know, when you throw a frog in boiling water, he's going to jump right out. But if you throw him into a pot of warm water and you slowly turn the heat up, he sits there until he boils to death. Well, we're the frog. They're slowly boiling us to death. And what they have in mind for us is a one-world government run by the banks. The banks are going to run the governments. And we're going to be the serfs and the slaves of these people. They want you all chipped, and they want your money and your chips, you know, and they can take money out of your chip whenever they want to. They can turn off your chip whenever they want to. And you're a slave to these people. And that's it. And that's where they want it to end up.
And if certain governments don't comply, there'll be a war.
Yeah, well, there'll be, you know, it's like in Iraq. Iraq is a case of America and the Federal Reserve System and the Bank of England working together to control the Middle East. Look, Robert Reich said something in 1999. It was in USA Today. And what he said, and he was one of Clinton's cabinet members, right? And you know what he said? He said, and here's a quote, "The dirty little secret is that America's domestic policy is now being run by Alan Greenspan and the Federal Reserve, not by Congress. America's foreign policy is now being run by the International Monetary Fund. And the president no longer needs a declaration of war to go to Congress for a declaration of war." Okay? That's right out of it. And that's the truth. You know, we're heading into dictatorship, one world government, a government without a country without borders. They want to make America, Canada, and Mexico into a zone, an area zone. They want to make the euro an area, and they have the Orient. They're doing everything they can do.
And it seems to be happening fast, Aaron.
It's happening very fast. But one of the things that's also happening is that South America is not going along with it. Yeah, I must say, the people in South America are resisting this big time. And so they don't have it totally easy. But what I find amazing is that the Americans are not standing up to fight this. You know, and that's why I made the movie, so they would understand what's really happening here. You know, I was friends with one of the Rockefeller family.
How did that happen?
Well, I was running for governor of Nevada in 98.
All right.
And I got a call from an attorney one day who said one of the Rockefeller family would like to meet you. They saw a video you made called Aaron Russo's Mad as Hell, and they'd like to talk to you. Okay? So I said, sure, I'd love to meet one of the Rockefellers. It'd be my pleasure, you know? And for the next few years, we became friends. And when I say friends, I mean we would talk to each other about our own points of view. I would have my point of view, he'd have his point of view, and we'd sort of learn from each other.
Is that Rockefeller dead now?
No.
Oh, okay.
And he said, I'm going to give you an example of how they think. Okay, here's the way they think. Aaron, he said to me, what do you think Women's Lib was about? I said, Women's Lib. I said, I guess it was about women getting equal pay to men and having a right to work, just mm-hmm. like they won the right to vote. You know, all the things that we learned, you know, from at the time, right? All those noble things. And he said, you know, Aaron, you're an idiot.
Aaron, you're an idiot, he said?
Yeah. What do you mean? And he was joking. You know, what do you mean you're an idiot? What do you mean I'm an idiot? He said, don't you understand? Women's Lib, we control, we know, we had all the media and the people promoting Women's Lib because we want to get women and to be taxable. We want them to work so we could tax them. Half the population wasn't working. We got them into the taxes. Plus, now we get control of the children at an early age where That's we can help train their minds.
And he's dead serious now?
Totally serious. And that's what Women's Lib was about. They promoted Women's Lib. Now, I'm not saying women don't have... I'm not against Women's Lib, for it. You know, I don't think about it that much. I'm only trying to tell you the way they think, and why they pushed it so hard. They sell things with a noble cause. You know, the idea is noble. It's honor. Women have a right to work just like men do. On the surface, that sounds right.
Sure.
But what they're really doing is wanting women to tax them and to have two people working to support a family now and to get the kids early. And to make everybody on that wheel, that hamster wheel, working and working and working.
And borrow more money.
And exactly. That's what they want. That's what the whole thing is about. They want a one world government, and that's what they're pushing for. And that's why the immigration issue is what it is. Because they don't want borders here. They don't want borders.
Are we all stooges, Aaron, while this all unfolds?
Yes. Well, I mean, when you say, are we all stooges? What I'm saying, I say yes, meaning that they're pulling the wool over most people's eyes. But there are a lot of people in America today who are waking up to this, who know better. And that's why I put up my website. That's why I made this movie, So I want people from all walks of life, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, to go to my website and sign up, join with us. We want this. I think this movie of mine is going to be huge.
Now, tell me about the movie in terms of the venue. Are you going to show it on the big screen? What are you going to do eventually?
I just want to make this point. I'll go wherever you want to go. I made this movie so that it can reach millions of people across America who don't know what's going on. And we've had standing ovations in the theaters. We've had lines around the block and all the kind of pre-screenings before the movie's actually released formally this summer. And people love the movie. And I think we can get millions of people to sign up. And we want to start a political movement of Republicans, of Democrats, of Independents, third-party people all joining together and not being polarized anymore to go after the real problem we face in this country, which is the Federal Reserve System, the bankers, and our government, which uses people and polarizes people, red states, blue states, Republican, Democrat, left-wing, right-wing, conservative, liberal. It's all nonsense. They want you fighting with each other so you don't pay attention to where the real problems lie.
Well, you know, and I've noticed, too, just in the few short years here, they have pushed the word Democrat to liberal, Republican to conservative. They very rarely use Democrat and Republicans anymore.
That's right. That's right. That's absolutely correct.
Because it's more emotional to
that's
say
right.
He's a liberal, he's a conservative.
Exactly. And that's what they want to do, and they want to keep everybody polarized, white against black. You know, Americans against Mexicans, this thing against that thing. Keep everything polarized. Stop being polarized. Be good Americans. This country was founded on the sense of every individual could be free to be who he is.
Who's going to win it, though, Aaron, when it all, the dust settles?
Well, I'm telling you one thing. I'm sure planning on winning. You know, I'm sure planning on getting this country back to what it's supposed to be. That's my goal. That's my ambition. That's why I just want to give myself a plug here. If everybody listening to the show would just go to the website, freedomtofascism.com, and sign up and become part of this force of Americans standing up for freedom, I'd be most appreciative.
I bet we crash your website tonight.
Come on, let's do it.
All right, we'll be back. We've got another couple hours to go with Aaron Russo. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Aaron, tell me about your evolution here as you went from music to producing feature films and now leading up to this one, Freedom to Fascism. How did you start, anyway?
Oh, God. Now you make me feel old.
Sorry.
How did I start? Well, actually, I started back in high school. I started putting on these events at local pubs and bars. There was a club called Fury's where I lived in Long Island, and I would promote those and have all my friends come and, you know, hang out. And then I started promoting some rock and roll shows at some of the clubs out in Atlantic Beach and Long Beach. And then what happened, I wasn't much of a student in school, and I never really cared for school very much. And I went to work in my dad's ladies' lingerie business. And actually, I'm kind of famous in that business because I designed the first ladies' bikini panties.
You did?
I did, I swear, yeah. That was back in 1963.
I'm talking to a living legend. As I
in the underwear business.
In the underwear business.
And so I designed bikini panties. Actually, back then, girls used to wear these pants called clam diggers, and they used to come low on the waist and come down to the calf. And they had to roll their underwear down to fit underneath the pants. And so I said, well, if they can wear bikini bathing suits, why not bikini underwear? And that's how I got the idea. And then it became my dad's whole business. But my dad, God bless his soul, he's not alive anymore, but I didn't really enjoy working for him. I worked there for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And I left, and I went to work for a new nightclub being built in New York called the Electric Circus on St. Mark's Place. And this is about 1967, and it was a really amazing club. It was a time of psychedelia and lots of drugs going on in America, and this club was one of those kind of clubs with light shows.
Oh yeah, sure.
Right, and so I worked there, and I was the gopher, and then the day they opened the club, they made me the manager, and so I managed the club for a while, and then I asked, you know, the owners, what was my future there? And they said, well, basically, you're doing it. So I gave my notice, and I said, I'm going to leave and build my own nightclub. And I went out and I raised some money, and I moved to Chicago, and I built a nightclub in Chicago called the Electric Theater. And that was a big club, and actually the day the club opened, Martin Luther King was assassinated. And my club was empty because the city of Chicago was in flames. And I'll never forget that. And
as was Detroit and everything else. Sure.
Right. And so my club was just open. It was dying of death. And so I had to learn how to start bringing big bands in there. Not, when I say big bands, I mean famous rock bands. So I brought in Jefferson Airplane, and I'll never forget that we'd never had a big show like that before. And all of a sudden, thousands of people showed up, and it was really hot in the club, and I didn't know how to handle it yet. And I'll never forget, it was so hot, Gracie Slick's eyelashes fell out. She was so angry at me. She was so angry. And then I learned how to do big shows at my club. Because my club held like 5,000 people.
Oh, that's huge.
Oh, yeah, it was huge. It was pretty big. And that was real tight. That was really a squeeze, you know. And so I started putting on big shows. I put on the Grateful Dead, and all the big San Francisco bands used to come in, Quicksilver Messenger, and, you know, just named Janis Joplin. Everybody came to the club to play, and my club became the Rock and Roll Club of Chicago. And I'll never forget when there was 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
where the police went wild. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, sure do.
Yeah, my club was the hospital for all the hippies, you know. And I'll never forget one night they raided my club for no reason and started beating the crap out of people for no reason. And they arrested me and a bunch of other people. And it was the first time I'd ever seen that kind of tyranny from police, you know, hurting innocent people who weren't doing anything.
Right.
And I'll never forget, I stepped into the, they came with all these paddy wagons, and they threw me into a paddy wagon. And as I stepped into the paddy wagon, one of the police officers grabbed me, my testicles from behind, and just squeezed. And I just fell on the floor in amazing pain. And I went on the radio to talk about it and television, you know, and nobody cared that the police did this. Nobody cared.
These episodes changing your life then at that time, Aaron?
Well, I didn't. I thought at that time that I was just in Chicago. You know, I just thought it was the corruption of Mayor Daley. I didn't understand this was a worldwide event. You know, there was this kind of corruption going on everywhere. And so to me, it was just more of a local Chicago. Because what happened was, I'll never forget, and I won't mention their names, but two police officers, whose names I still remember, came to see me afterwards and said, look, we didn't know that was you, you're so young, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if you want to stay in business here, you know, the mayor wants $2,000 a month.
The mayor wants it?
Yeah, the mayor wants $2,000 a month. And that's how you stay. Well, actually, it was done a little bit differently. He said, the way they actually said it was, listen, we have the A plan, which will cost you this much a month.
The A plan.
We have the B plan. This is true. The B plan, the C plan, and the Super Deluxe. And I said, what's the Super Deluxe plan? He said, that's when we call you up and let you know we're going to raid you, so you're prepared. Nothing ever really happens, but it looks good for the community, you know?
Yeah.
I said, all right, give me the Super Deluxe. And that was $2,000 a month.
Man. And now, do you think the mayor was in on it?
I totally believe that, yes. I mean, I totally believe. Because I used to talk to them about it all the time. And so, you know, we sort of, you know, they used to come to the club and hang out. They used to look for young girls at the club, the mm-hmm. cops, you know. I mean, it was so foul. It was really, it was kind of degenerate, you know. And so anyway, I did that to stay in business. And then, what happened was one night the club burned down because they wanted to close it, and because the mayor said the local alderman wanted the club closed because elections were coming. And then one night there was a fire, and we never found out who did the fire. It was never investigated.
How convenient, though, for them, right?
And so I moved back to New York, where I was from, and I already built a name and reputation in the nightclub business because I had Led Zeppelin there. I had all the big bands in my club. And I went back to New York, and one night I saw this girl playing on Johnny Carson's show. And they were talking about her as if she was some sort of freaky girl, you know. And Johnny would be laughing. and it was Bette Midler. And I saw Bette, and I thought she was just fantastic.
Yeah.
And so I went down to the Improv where she was playing, where she mentioned she was playing, and I tried to get her to be a client of mine. And it didn't work at the time, but then somehow we hooked up later on, and I became her manager.
And you really, other than your groups that you'd bring in, you really hadn't done that before, had you?
No, I really wasn't a manager before. I managed one group earlier, a group called The Flock, which was a very good rock band with an electric violin player. But I never really managed...
talent like that.
Talent like that, yeah. No. But she was being managed by some people who didn't understand the hip factor, mm-hmm. I call it. And so she came to me, and we agreed that I was going to manage her, and I did. And as soon as she came under my management, I guess it was circumstances or a good combination of both, but her career just started to take off. And I put her into the Metropolitan Opera House New Year's Eve. It was called Bette at the Met, and it was a huge, huge success. And her career just started taking off. Then we got the cover of Newsweek and Time and all these things. And then I did The Rose with her, which got her an Academy Award nomination and the first film I produced. Then we did a show on Broadway called Clams on the Half Shell, for which we received many many Tonys. Well, not many, but I received a Tony. But we have tremendous accolades for the show, great reviews. And she just became a giant superstar very quickly. But the problem we had was that I got involved with her in ways other than business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I should never have done that.
Huh.
And that was a mistake for me. It was a mistake for her.
Right.
And if that never happened, I'd probably still be with her to this day.
Are you friends now?
Not really. We haven't talked in a long time. Even though I know that she cares for me a great deal and I care for her a great deal, and I know that from many people who have come to me and told me that. But it's just not right somehow. I mean, she's married and she has children, a child, Sophie, and I'm married, and I don't know. I think she would find it uncomfortable.
Sure.
I've wanted to do a movie with her. Do you remember a woman named Belle Barth?
Yes.
I wanted Bette to play Belle Barth.
Right. Right.
You know, and
she would have been perfect for that.
Perfect for that. I mean, she was killing that role. And I've been trying to get her to do it, and I just can't get her to. And her career needs a lift right now, you know.
Yeah, she does. She needs a shot in the arm.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd love to do that, but I just can't get her to agree to it. I was on the emailing with Michael Eisner and her the other day trying to get her to do it, but she just won't agree to it. But in any case, so anyway, I managed Bette Midler, and then after The Rose, she and I, we went on a tour of the world, and we were in Australia, and we really got into it heavily there, and we split up, and then I came back to America, and I started getting more deep. I had already made The Rose, even though it hadn't been released yet. Then The Rose came out, and it was a big success, and then I started getting offers to produce other movies.
But one thing I found out about Hollywood, Aaron, as you did then, you know, you get that first success story under your belt, they knock your doors down.
Well, particularly if you're a director or a writer, not so much for producers.
Right.
Producers don't have it like writers and directors do. You know, producers to the studios are really a dime a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
They don't think that highly of producers because they don't think producers are creative. They think producers are businessmen.
Yeah.
And they think they're businessmen, and so they don't really feel the need. But if you're creative, they know they're not. So they feel the need to get creative people. But what's happened to Hollywood is it's become totally institutionalized and corporatized. And the movies they make now are the worst movies ever. I mean, the movies are horrible because it's all corporate. And so even my movie that I just finished, everybody knows I have a great movie. Nobody will touch it because they know what it's about.
Now, and is yours, Freedom to Fascism, is it a movie, a drama? Is it a documentary? What is it?
My movie is a documentary. It's a lot like Michael Moore's 9/11.
Okay, all right.
Except the difference being that his movie dealt with things from the left attacking the right, so to speak.
Yes.
You know, he added to the polarization of America. My movie doesn't do that. My movie really attacks the system itself. And because the Democrats and Republicans, to me, are the same. There's really not much of a difference. It's all a facade to keep people polarized, and it's not really where the problem is. The problem is the people that control the Republicans and the Democrats. And they're the same people. And so my movie goes after those people, and it goes after the system, and it proves pretty conclusively that there is no law that requires you to pay an income tax because the Supreme Court said so 8 times. And so how can the IRS defy the Supreme Court? You know, and they can't. And there's never been a statute written that allows it.
What was it about that, the IRS, the lack of a statute that got you into that? I mean, here you are, you're in Hollywood, you're doing films, you're producing things. All of a sudden, you get into politics and this. How'd that happen?
Well, what happened was I had been very successful, and I just had a bad feeling about America, what was happening here. And I moved to Tahiti. I left America and I moved because I didn't like what was. I felt a sense of oppression here.
So you ran away?
Well, I left. Yeah, I don't know if you say I ran away, but I just thought I would raise my family elsewhere. And I went away to Tahiti, and then my girlfriend didn't want to raise my children down there, and so we came to America and we got a van. And drove around America for a year, camping out, going up to the Canadian Rockies.
And you were living off of, I guess, your proceeds from all your other endeavors.
Yeah, just living. Just, you know, I had something stashed away.
And, all right.
And we'd camp out. We would do whatever we were doing. And stay in hotels or camping or just enjoying homeschooling the children, basically. And we ended up in Vermont for a while. And then Ross Perot was running for office. And when I saw how successful he was, I realized that I wasn't alone in my feelings about my dissatisfaction with the government here, that there were lots of people that were unhappy. Because up to that point, I thought it was just me. You know, I felt like the oddball out.
Right.
And not that I was a big fan of Ross Perot's, because I wasn't, you know, but I did see that millions of people felt like I felt.
Well, he brought an alternative to the table.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I started getting involved in politics, saying that, you know, maybe I could change things, I could fix things. And so I started a political party called the Constitution Party that's still running today. And when I started it, it was really more of an alternative to the Libertarian Party, because I had felt the Libertarian Party wasn't being very effective. And I thought a party called the Constitution Party could be. Because who could deny the Constitution? And so we would start off very well, and then it started to slow down. I gave it to somebody to run, and I was going to go off to L.A. to make TV shows about America and sell them to the networks.
As dramas?
Well, a TV show like a talk show, but much more intense.
Okay.
You know, and I did that, and I gave the party to somebody to run, and they merged with some other parties, and it became more of a right-wing Christian party than I originally attended, where I was more of a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
And God knows, I think a lot of the right-wing Christian movement has a lot of very good things to say. I think they're on the ball. I disagree with them on a few matters, but they have a lot of very good things to say about freedom.
A couple of weeks ago, I played a clip. I had just pure open lines for the night. No guests. Just let people vent. But I played the clip from, because this is interesting, because you had a pilot television show like this. But I played a clip from the movie Network, old Peter Finch's Howard Beale speech.
Sure.
Mad as hell, not going to take it anymore.
Exactly. Well, that's what I did on my TV show. I was like, remember Sam Kinison?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
screamed a little bit too much for me, but I remember it.
Well, that's what I did, exactly. Yeah. I played Sam Kinison being Peter Finch.
Okay.
If that makes any sense to you.
You were the talent?
I was the talent.
All right.
And I played Sam Kinison. I had a really long hair. I had a big pearl earring in my ear. And I ranted on the stage. And I was yelling and screaming. I was mad as hell. And the truth is, I really was mad as hell. Because I was discovering what the government did, and I was so outraged by what the government was doing that I couldn't control myself, you know? And it showed in this video I made. And, I mean, Waco and the things at Ruby Ridge and the way this government treated people and killed people without any responsibility for what they do.
Did you really expect the networks to pick that up?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I did make a deal with Disney for it. And but then Disney wanted to control who my guests were, and I wouldn't do that. So the deal fell apart. We were very deep negotiations, and so I then put the video. I then put the thing out as a video, and I got a call from some people in Nevada who had seen it, and they said, "Look, would you come to Nevada and talk?" You know, I said, "Yeah, but who's going to come see me?" You know what I mean?
Yeah, who's going to be there, right?
Right, who's going to be there? So I said, don't worry, we'll get 25, 35 people in a room, and you'll come, and you'll talk. And I said, okay, I'll try that, because I had never done that before.
Sure.
And I went to Reno at the Sands Hotel, and there were 350 people there. And I was shocked, and they were shocked. And they had to open up the walls in the hotel and bring chairs in, and it was this huge success. And so they said, why don't you, let's do the same thing in Las Vegas. And so we did, and we had over 1,100 people come to see me in Las Vegas. And we would show the video, and I would talk. And I swear, when I walked down the hallway to get to the front, these people were grabbing at me like I was some sex symbol. You know what I mean? they were so happy that someone did, you know, was telling the truth, you know. And I did Mad as Hell, and I did Vegas, and it was a big success. And they asked me to run for political office, and I had never run for anything except in high school when I won the class presidency, but they took it away from me.
And this was as a Republican, wasn't it?
Yeah, I ran as a Republican, yeah, because I thought that was the best way to win, not because I was really a Republican.
That was for governor of the state of Nevada.
Exactly.
And you got the nomination?
Well, what happened in the primary, it was a four-way primary, me, the guy who was the governor, the lieutenant governor, and somebody else. And so I came in second in a four-way race with about 30%.
That's pretty good. Stay with us, Aaron. More to come in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So, Aaron, tell me about the ingredients that you used in order to put the film together.
The ingredients. That's an interesting point of view.
It sounds like a recipe.
Well, a little sugar, a little flour. Yeah,
exactly. a little antifreeze.
Well, I mean, basically, it was, you know, it was me taking my movie-making skills. I knew how to make a movie, and my political knowledge, and combining them together to make this movie. You know, I mean, I'm the one who financed, I wrote it, I produced it, I directed it, and it was really a work of love for me to do, to bring to the American people and show them what's really happening here. And so, you know, I had to bring in my DP of photography and my sound people and my crew. But really, essentially, for me, let me try and explain something. When you make a regular movie, like Trading Places or
right,
The Rose,
or The Rose,
you sit down and you write a screenplay. And once you get, and the screenplay could take a month or a year or mm-hmm. 2 years. You know, it's very hard to write a screenplay. It's very difficult. But once you get the screenplay you want, then you go shoot it. And then when you're done shooting it, you can go edit it. But when you do a documentary like this one, what you have to do is you have to just go out and shoot. And you don't write, you don't have anything written, because you don't know what you're going to get, because it's a documentary.
That's right.
And so after you have 100 hours of footage, now you got to sit down and edit and write it at the same time by seeing the footage you have.
And condense it down to what, 90 minutes?
Well, 100 minutes, 105 minutes. And condense it so you have a minute for every hour. You see, and you've got to put it together in a way that makes a lot of sense. And it becomes a huge editing job, you know, because you want to tell the story in a certain way, and you have so much footage to go through, and it's not written in advance, so you know exactly what cuts you want to make, where you want to make them. And so it's a much more difficult job for me to make the documentary, but also one I love much more than any film I ever made. I mean, I think this is the best movie I've ever made in my life. And it's the one I'm most proud of, because it's the one that can really help change America. And when people see the movie, they really begin to understand the truth about where America lies, where the problem lies, where we're heading into the future, you know, the kind of world we're heading into, and how to stop that from happening.
Have we been sold out, Aaron, by some of these rich families within this country who just really care about their own greed, how much money they're going to make?
Well, there's no question we've been sold out. You know, the people who run this country no longer care about the Constitution. They don't care about individual rights. They care about big institutions controlling everything. And this country was founded on the premise that individuals were sovereign, and that each one of us owns our own life. And when you own your own life, you're free to do what you want with your life, except committing violence, theft, or fraud against another human being. But anything other than that, it's your right. You own yourself, and it's your right to do it. But today, the government thinks they own you, and you can't do anything without their approval. I mean, they can take your house away from you today and give it to somebody else. You know, I mean, you have no more freedom in America. America's become a totalitarian nation. And only people who think they can watch a football game or drink a beer or go to a movie, that makes them free, you know. That's not the case. And the government takes you money. They can put you in jail for life just by calling without a trial, without a jury, without charges. You know, the government, under executive orders, can take any American they want and put them on workforces. If people really understood the laws that have been passed in this country and the executive orders that have been passed and the kind of things they're doing, the internment camps that are being built.
Soon they'll be able to quarantine you.
Yeah, exactly. They can give you vaccinations with untested vaccinations against your will.
Yep.
I mean, come on, we're not this. We're not their serfs. They're our servants. You know, if you have a servant at home, a maid, do you let her tell you what to do?
Well, I don't have one, but I wouldn't.
Yeah, of course you wouldn't. And the same thing with the government. We are not supposed to allow the government to tell us what to do. The government works for us. And until we straighten out this perversion in our government, we're going to be heading down the wrong path. And the reason this is happening is because the bankers control our government. They control Hillary Clinton. They control George Bush. They control Bill Clinton. I mean, William Quigley, who was a professor at Georgetown, who helped Bill Clinton, who was his mentor. But Bill Clinton said, you know, what they're really trying to accomplish is have all these private banks control the governments through the money supply.
Yes.
You know, and that's what it's about. And they're doing it, and we're suffering the consequences. Bill Clinton, you know, all this talk right now about, you know, George Bush and, you know, all the tapping of our phones. Bill Clinton, under Echelon, did it just as much.
Sure.
It had nothing to do with 9/11. It has to do with the way the government controls the people today. And they can tell us what we have to do, when we have to do it. And I'm not going to stand for that.
What side of the fence are you in, Aaron, on the 9/11 story?
What side of the fence am I on?
Yeah, I mean,
let me put you this way. As far as 9/11 is concerned, I have a lot of questions that have never been answered. I don't understand how Building 7 came down, okay? I cannot count. And most people don't even know Building 7 ever came down.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
You know, most people say, you know, 9/11, oh, the planes hit the buildings. And I look at that and I say, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. The way they imploded, I can't see that from a plane hitting a building, particularly when it hit it near the top of the building.
Well, and you'll say, well, okay, maybe it happened to one, and then two?
Right. I mean, this, even in Spain, the fires in Spain, which were hotter than the fires from 9/11, didn't bring the building down that way, okay? And then you have Building 7, the third building that fell down. How did that fall? 8 hours later, it falls down 8 hours later, and the owner of the building, Larry Silverstein, says that the fire department pulled the building.
Yeah.
Right?
We pulled the building.
Yeah, we pulled the building. Yeah. Well, if you pulled the building, that means you had to have been doing that for weeks, because you can't pull a building in a few hours. It takes weeks of preparation. So if they pulled the building, they had been preparing that for weeks ahead of time, which changes the whole look at what happened on that day. So I have a lot of questions about 9/11, a lot of questions. I've been thinking about making the definitive movie on it. I haven't made that decision
See,
yet.
See, yeah, I think you're right. I think where Michael Moore fell short is, though he had a lot of good information in there, it was a bitter presentation. And you can't change people's minds with that kind of approach.
No, it was strictly left-wing versus right-wing.
Right. You can't do that.
It was blue states versus red states. Okay, now, that's what they want. They want that kind of...
Yeah, you need to be logical. You need to present the facts the way you know it and let people decide what they want.
Exactly. You have to show the facts for what they are, like I did with the IRS section, like we show in the police state section, you know. We show how the Real ID Act is already passed and it becomes law in May 2008. We show how they're using the chips. We actually show all this. We show the irrefutable evidence of what is happening in this country and where it's going. We show, I have a scene in there where you show Senator Joe Biden talking to the Supreme Court Justice Roberts as they were questioning him, saying, you know that you're going to have to decide whether we can put those chips in people and not to track them wherever they go.
Eventually, that's right.
That's happening now, not eventually. It's actually happening right now. Okay? There are companies that are now forcing their employees to put those chips in if they want to work at the company. It's happening right now as we speak.
Not even voluntary anymore.
If you want to work here, you got to put the chip in.
So what do? They got to put the chip in.
Well, there you go.
If they want their job.
And they want to feed their family. There you go. And that's happening now. And so this has, you know, I want to make a law that's illegal to put anybody, have put RFID chips in people. I think, you know, we're not dogs. I don't want a homing device inside me. But what they're going to do is make sure you can't open your computer without it. You can't have money without it. All money's becoming digitized. It's just these digits, you know. And they're going to put the digit in your computer chip, and you're going to have to wear it. And people say, well, I'm not going to wear a chip. Well, you're going to wear it if you can't do anything without it.
I want to know where you are all the time, Aaron. That's why we're going to put these chips in.
Exactly. Homing device inside everybody. And we have to stop this from happening in this country. We have to stop it. We were the beacon of light for freedom for all of this world.
Are you spiritual or religious at all?
I have very, very deep belief in God. I am not religious in the sense of organized religion.
Do you believe that this chip could very well be what the Bible called the sign of the beast?
I mean, in the sense that that the Bible predicted this.
It is uncanny.
It's uncanny. The Bible predicted it, and it is what it is. I mean, I don't know how to attribute that. You know, I know that deep in my heart, in my soul, I believe very deeply in God. I mean, very deeply. I just don't like organized religion because, you know, to me, organized religions are always fighting with each other about things, you know. And there are more lives lost over organized. Because I believe God is between you and your God. And organized religion, I have a problem with it. But in terms of my faith in God, very deeply, very deep faith.
A friend of mine's on the Council of Foreign Relations, CFR, and I asked him, I said, so you know this organization is involved in this one world government and all that. And he said, it is not. He, I believe him, Aaron, only because he's insulated. He's at a layer where he doesn't get to this part.
Well, he can just read in their journals. It's right in their journals. It's not like it's a secret. It's right in there. I can give him the evidence in the journals where it is. I mean, Strobe Talbot said it. Paul Wahlberg said it. It's right in their journals. They've said it. That's one world government many times. The problem. I was asked to join the Council on Foreign Relations.
You were?
Yes, I was.
How did that happen?
Well, my Rockefeller friend, you know, spoke to me about it.
Oh, okay.
I never got the written invitation, but I was approached that I want that written invitation. You know, and I didn't want. I was not interested in that. You know, to me, life is about integrity, character, honor, more than money. And if you don't like yourself, I don't care how much money you have, you're not gonna have a happy life. I mean, to me, to like yourself, to like who you are as a person, is the most important thing in your life, even more than your health and your family. So I don't think you can have a healthy life or a good family unless you like who you are.
You know, if Stanley Kubrick was still alive, you and he would do the sequel to Eyes Wide Shut, I bet.
I don't doubt it. You know, but the thing is, to like yourself means that you have to respect yourself. And to respect yourself means that you have to behave in a fashion that you would respect from somebody else.
So I bet you believe, the way I do, that this bird flu situation is not going to be a pandemic and it's all hype.
I believe it's hype, yes.
Yep.
I do. I don't believe it for a second. And there's so much. You know what the real problem is, though? Is that you have to question it now. You know, you have to question what your government says.
Well, that's the sad part. And I got to tell you what's even worse is I don't believe there's going to be a natural bird flu pandemic that mutates and kills off millions of people. However, I can believe that some crazy governments will let some disease loose.
Right. And that's the problem, that you don't know, you can't trust your government anymore because there's no more integrity and there's no more honor in the government. I mean, you're going to trust Hillary Clinton to be the president of the United States? Give me a break. You're going to trust George Bush? Who do you trust of these people? Nobody. There's nobody there to trust. It's time to bring them all down. It's time to create a new political party in this country and to create a new paradigm of thinking.
Will that ever happen? It's really a two-party system.
Well, it is right now, but I have every intention to change it. And I hope the people listening to the show tonight will participate in that change.
Are you going to run again?
I don't know about that. That's not important. What's important now is that we get people organized and we create an organization that can handle all this so that people know when we're going to have strikes and we're going to boycott things and we're going to be a foil. Look, the way it works in America today, the government, our government is run by the banks because they make the money.
Always was, Aaron, okay. I think.
But the truth is the government can be run by the people again because we have the numbers. So the banks have the money, and they can produce that money very easily. We have the numbers, which are harder to organize. But if the people of this country ever decided that they wanted to really make a change, we could organize this country to stop what's happening. And that's why I put up that website. And again, I'm going to say, I hope everybody listening to this show will go to the website and sign up and put down your name and your email address and let us contact you when the time comes to make a change. Go on the site and look at some of the trailers.
What about the people, though, Aaron, who are scared? The people who say, look, you know what, if I don't file my taxes, I'm gonna go to jail, and I don't want to take that chance.
Well, I'm not sitting here telling people not to file their taxes. All I'm saying is there's no law. Whether they want to file or not is their own situation. I don't care whether people file taxes or not. What I care about is that there's no law and that they're forcing people to pay this and putting people in jail if they don't.
All right, but why isn't the ACLU, that seems to jump in and stick its nose into every business, I mean, they're the ones that say you can't even have a nativity scene during Christmas, for crying out loud.
Oh, I don't buy into that either.
Well, why aren't they, you know, going to court over this, over the tax code?
Maybe they don't understand it. Maybe they don't understand
it. Or maybe they're part of the problem.
Maybe they are. I mean, ACLU did a very good piece on pizza delivery. Have you ever seen that?
No.
Oh, it's fabulous.
No, what is that?
Yeah, it's on Google. Like, you can find it. It's also in my movie, but it's a 3-minute short, and it's about somebody calling up to order a pizza.
Oh, yes. Okay, I know. I played that.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I played that, but yeah. I didn't put the ACLU together. Was that their thing?
Yeah, it was ACLU who did that.
Yeah, this was great. Where a guy orders a pizza and the woman knows everything about it. Yeah,
exactly.
We played that.
Exactly, and it's fabulous. You know, and so the ACLU does some good work. I also think they do a lot of bad work, poor judgment. But you know, you can't accept. I'd rather stop criticizing other people and get together on the things we agree with, and get our Constitution back, and get freedom of the individual back in America, where people can do whatever they want. Look, I don't care what somebody else does, as long as you don't commit crimes. You don't commit violence. You don't commit theft. You don't commit fraud. Do whatever you want. It's your life. You own yourself. Go do what you want to do, as long as you don't hurt other people when you're doing it. That's one of the – you can't do it anymore.
Well, in this campaign, throw in a new alternative energy source while you're at it.
Oh, I'd love to do that. I mean, I would love – I mean, the environment is very important to me, and the way the energy system works in this country, you know, I mean, Tesla came up with some great things, and that's something I wish I had the time – to get into more deeply, but right now my battle is to shut down the Federal Reserve System and bring constitutional law back to America.
So this is your big push then?
Oh yeah, this is the push. Yeah, I mean, you've got to stop the Supreme Court. I mean, look what they did with this eminent domain. It's a disaster that the government can come in and take your house from you, your businesses from you, to put up another one.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is that?
One that pays them a little bit more?
Exactly. It's thievery. You know, our government is disgusting today. It is disgusting.
Okay, now, I want you to answer this, because I'm going to get messages from people say, Aaron, why don't you move to Tahiti again if you don't like
it? Oh, because they're idiots to say that. The idea is to fix your country. Don't tell me love it or leave it. That's a bunch of crap. You know, I'm tired of
hearing that. That's a cop-out argument.
It's a stupid argument. What made America a great nation was our Constitution and the freedom of the individual, not politicians dictating to us how we live our lives. And if we're not vigilant and do what Thomas Jefferson said and stay vigilant, we're going to become slaves.
Why is it happening so fast?
Well, I don't think it's so fast. I just think as you get closer to the end, it speeds up. I think it's been going on since 1913.
This could be the end if it's not stopped.
Exactly. I think we're there. You remember Harrison Ford in that movie when he's running away and there's a door coming down from the ceiling and he's got to get under that door before it closes? That's where we are. We have to get under that door before it closes.
Fugitive.
Yeah. No, I think it was Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, that one, too.
Yeah.
I just saw him in The Fugitive running through a door that was closing.
Is that right?
I guess every movie he's running through a door.
Well, you know writers in Hollywood.
Stay with us, Aaron. We're going to take phone calls next hour. You ready for that?
Anything you want.
Okay.
Sure.
Phone calls. You're up next. Aaron Russo doesn't hold back, does he? I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. Aaron, do you think maybe this is a plan where they figure there's going to be so many people, not only in this country but around the world, that they want to take control of it right now? Maybe eventually, as Kissinger once said, let's reduce the world's population to a livable level. Maybe that's their whole plan.
Well, I mean, I certainly think that they want to do that. I mean, I know that from my conversations with them, that they would like to do that, to lower the population of the world. There's no question about that. There's no question that they want a one-world government. And so all those things are definitely so. The question is, what do we want? I don't care what they want. What do we want? And I personally don't want that. I don't want to. Just imagine this. If you think you have no voice now in your government, okay, imagine a world government. You would have nothing to say.
No say. You're a rubber stamp.
Yeah, you're a robot. You're a robot with a homing device inside you, and they're going to tell you what to do. And they're going to fill your little computer chip with money, and then they're going to take it out when they decide how much they can take out. And they're going to tell you how much you're going to pay in taxes. And they're going to tell you how much money you got to give to the UN and how much money you got to do. And you have nothing to say because they take it out at their will. You have no more free will. They want to take away your free will. And I refuse to be a part of that. And that's why I built this website. That's why I made this money. And that's why I'm here on the air talking to people to say, if you don't want that in your life, join on. Come join with us. Make a difference. Otherwise, you're just sitting back like a pigeon ready to be shot.
You know my buddy Alex Jones? He's got his own alternative show.
Sure.
You know, he'd love you. You guys would be the best of friends.
Yeah, when I was down in Austin previewing the movie.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, he called me, but I was already leaving for Dallas, so I couldn't get together with him. But I'm very familiar. He's really out there pushing really hard.
He'll be coming up here pretty soon. We'll get together. He's pretty tight with Charlie Sheen, and Charlie, of course, made some statements about 9/11.
Yeah, I saw that. And, I mean, when I come, I'm leaving for, you know, for Paris tomorrow. I mean, for Cannes tomorrow. For the film festival. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. And I'd love to meet you when I get back.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've got to take a little trip myself this week. I'm going to St. Louis, Washington, D.C., and then back here again. When you're back, I'll be back.
Great. Let's make a plan to get over the air. We're discussing this, but let's make a plan to get together.
We'll do it. Let's go to the phones. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with Aaron Russo. Hi there.
Mr. Minori, hi. This is Bob. I'm calling from the border between Central Point and White City. I want to say
up there in Oregon. Okay, Bob.
Yes, Southern Oregon. I want to say to Mr. Russo, I was at your Ashland showing.
Oh, okay.
And you couldn't have put it more succinctly. This is your best movie. I think this will be the movie of the century.
Oh, thank you.
Because
so
of
much.
What you have shown. And the only reason I didn't come up to meet you is because you were being smothered by so many people.
What did you like about it, Bob? Tell us.
I liked every single part of the movie, from the beginning all the way to the last bit. There is nothing about that movie I didn't like.
Was it one of those eye openers?
Well, my eyes have been wide open for over 20 years. D.B. Kidd is a good friend of mine. She ran for Congress twice in Northern California, and I helped her run. We're friends. I wanted to bring up some real quick points here.
Sure.
IAHF. John Hamill, the International Advocates for Health Freedom.
Yes.
He's the gentleman that suggested to Mr. Norrie to have you on the show, I believe. He's a friend of mine. He's fighting for the Codex.
Yes.
There's some really good websites for people to see. It's Infowars.com.
That's Alex's website.
9/11 podcasts, and that's plural, podcasts.com. Loose Change, that's one word. You can do a Google search on that. Those two websites have got the most amazing video clips on the 9/11 incident.
Yes.
And just warnings to the people that patriots are being considered to be vigilantes. And very soon we are going to start being arrested for what we say. That's how much the government's controlling us.
Well, don't get paranoid.
No, I'm not paranoid. But, you know, Ruby Ridge and Waco were tests on the public to see how much we would put up with.
Well, the public is waking up a lot more than they were then. And I say, you know, instead of instilling fear in people, let's instill optimism, because I believe we can win this thing. And it's fear that'll drive us away and keep people in a shell. And I'd like to see everybody stand up, fight. Because it says when we're unified as one, that we can win this thing. And those websites you gave out are very good websites, by the way. And the thing with Codex, in case the people listening aren't aware of Codex, what's happening is through the CAFTA treaties, they're taking away our right to own and buy supplements, vitamins, minerals, supplements. And that's becoming a law in America. And it's other countries now going to be affecting our laws. And so if you're a person who believes in supplements and wants your vitamin C and all those kind of things, as I do, they're trying to take them away from you.
Yep. That's because Big Pharma's behind that.
Exactly. And there's a woman in France on trial right now for selling 500 milligrams of vitamin C.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing.
If she was selling something else, she'd probably be able to get by with it.
I won't get into that one.
First-time caller line, your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
This is Winnie from Ventura, California.
Hello, Winnie.
I'd like to, Aaron, to talk about the Wells Fargo Bank that's in my town that is giving illegal immigrants home loans, and they are not using any kind of application, identity for citizenship. The applicants do need a tax identification number.
What about the old credit checks?
Well, this is it. Nothing. All they have to prove is that they have an account for 6 months, and they've lived here for 2 years, and they probably use their matricular consulaire card. And they say it's going nationwide. And I'm also curious. Wells Fargo has been bought out by a Minnesota holding company called Norwest. And I can't figure out who owns Norwest.
I think that's publicly held, so stockholders own that.
Okay. Well, the thing is, I just really don't want to deal with a bank that is giving illegal immigrants home loans.
How do they have the money to buy a house?
You know, this makes you wonder.
It's the banking system again promoting this. They don't want the borders. The more embedded that the immigrants become in America, the better the bankers like it. That's what you have to understand. So they're going to use whatever powers they have to make that happen. It's not a surprise. That's just part of the system. It's part of the Federal Reserve System, and all these bankers report to the Fed. And that's just what it is. They're just satellites of the Fed.
That's funny. Look, I live in St. Louis, Aaron, part-time, and I live in Los Angeles part-time. And the housing prices are dramatically different.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And I can't imagine that illegal immigrants would have any money at all to be able to afford these California houses.
Well, it's not that they have the money. The banks are willing to give them the money because the banks make the money out of thin air.
I mean, well, how do they make their payments?
It's promoting the political agenda. I mean, right now, anybody wants to get loans. They'll give loans to people all day long now because they want people indebted. They want people indebted to them. They're trying to keep this economy afloat, you know, and people are living off their houses. People are taking all the money out of their houses, whatever equity they have, to live. And
that's dangerous. That is dangerous.
Oh, it's hugely dangerous because it's going to come back to bite them in the butt. You know, that's fairly obvious. But she shouldn't be surprised by the fact that Wells Fargo is giving these loans because the bankers want these loans to go to these people. So they want them embedded in America. They want to break down the borders here. It's that simple.
Thanks for the call, Winnie. East of the Rockies, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Yeah.
George, thank you very much. I'm going to say thank you every time you play a Beatles song during one of your broadcasts.
you're welcome. I'll say you're welcome every time.
Okay. And Aaron, I just wanted to give you kudos because you're right. I mean, we're not living in a two-party society. We are living in a one-party electoral society as far as I have seen over the past, 14 years now.
Yeah.
But what I wanted to know was, in all of your research and everything else that you have actually delved into, have you ever, I mean, the banks and all that is great, but, I mean, there are insurers that go and insure the actual banks themselves. Have you found a link between the Federal Reserve and the ultimate insurers that actually exist here?
No, not really. I mean, I think that the insurance companies are just giant corporations that feed off the Federal Reserve system. Remember, it's the bankers that make the money. And so whether it's an insurance institution or whether it's a television network institution, they all feed off the same nipple. And so, I've never recognized any difference between an insurance company and a media network, so to speak, in terms of, how they function in their relationship with the Federal Reserve and the banks. I've never seen anything like that.
But surely, when that much money is involved, there must be something or someone that links, like the insurance companies are the third, fourth biggest entity in America, if not worldwide. So there must be something that links them to the media, to actually our government or what our government pervades.
They all have lobbyists in our government. I think the point is that whether it's the insurance companies or Procter & Gamble or General Motors, whoever it may be, they all get their money from the Federal Reserve System primarily. They create the money. And so I've never seen any connection between the insurance companies and the Federal Reserve that's any different than other institutions with the Federal Reserve. There may be. I've just never seen anything like it.
Hmm. So when a hurricane hits my city and the insurance companies have to overextend themselves,
right?
Does that not, is there no link that actually, because, I mean, we have had more hurricanes this past year than any other year, obviously on record. Is there nothing that links it to the absolute incredible inflation that we've seen, including gas prices?
Well, inflation is the creation of currency. I mean, if the insurance companies are running low on money, I'm sure they can go borrow the money from the banks and make it out of thin air, and that's inflation.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Next up, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there, Wildcard Line.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Lisa from the South Bay in L.A.
Okay, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Good evening, Mr. Aaron Russer. listen, my next movie for you is to make a movie about how illegal immigration has affected our own families.
That's an interesting subject.
Let me tell you something. I'm sitting here in my shed, my backyard, and I'm supposed to write a eulogy for my 45-year-old friend, Linda Liu, who took her life because she's a low blue-collar worker, meaning factory worker. She cleaned homes, and she was a catering girl for many years. I mean, these people get up at 2 in the morning, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
For umpteen years. And she took her life because she can get a job.
Well, she got laid off or something?
She was born in Texas, white, American girl. And I just feel that her opportunities were taken from her.
Mm-hmm. And you think that was because of immigration?
Well, sir, I don't feel it was completely because of that. But I know that money, it can make you happy. It can make you unhappy, but it can take care of you.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like today, as American, and I got to tell you the truth, I'm Canadian American immigrant. I'm legal, but I just feel like our government and these bankers, they don't see us as who we are.
No, but you're nothing but a number to those people. You have no, you're not a human being to those people.
But
if that's what you're talking about, you're 100% correct.
So, George?
Yeah, Lisa.
I've been listening to you for a while now, and I have you to thank for my screwed-up sleep schedule, but I have to thank you for it anyway. But I got to ask you, man, who's happy anymore? Who's happy anymore here?
That's a very good. That's a very, very good question.
The USA is not grounded anymore.
Right.
Somebody cut the line that grounded us. And I got to tell you, man, I've lost my friend of 40 years, and I was really hoping to have her for as long as we both shall live, right?
Of course.
But I know that something happened here that stopped her from living anymore and stopped her from hoping. And I feel, as a legal immigrant, that the illegal immigration is affecting our families and affecting our friends and our home lives.
I feel very badly for you.
You know what? I feel
something
for them, because my father came here from, he immigrated from Scotland to Canada so he could marry my mom, who was of a different religion.
Uh-huh.
So they had to run away to get married to Canada. He had $12 in his pocket, and he came to Canada to start a new life, and he wasn't even married yet. But what I'm saying is that we all tried real hard. I, today, as a Canadian American, or should I say American Canadian, that we all work real hard to do our best.
Well, she has a lot of good points here, Aaron.
I think so. I think the point you said, who's happy here, I think there's a lot, I think there's a lot of truth there. I think there's a lot of people in this country who are very miserable, who feel lost, don't know where to turn. Everything feels very shallow. They're not grounded anymore. They don't know how to be grounded. And there's no more trust and faith in their government. And there's no heroes anymore. And I think a lot of that's got to do with the way this country has changed. And I feel very bad for you and your friend that you're going through that loss. But I hope you find the courage within yourself to stand up and look inside yourself and try and do the things in your life that you can respect yourself for doing, and standing up to take back our country and our government. Because I think most of it stems from that. And unless we have the proper leaders who are setting the right examples and people we can believe in, this country is doomed. And we have to restore this country back to a place that people have faith in the integrity and the honesty, and stop being so cynical and thinking that just all politicians are liars and no good, because they are. So we have to get people back who are honest again, because our government is real. I said before, they were disgusting. They're not honorable people. They're not honest people. They don't care about us at all. Everything is spin and noise, and it's not. There's no more sincerity left. And until we get sincerity back in our government, we're doomed.
Stay with us. Final phone calls for our guest Aaron Russo in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. You're getting great response on my computer fast blast system, Aaron, from listeners who give me instant feedback.
Fast blast. I don't know what that is.
They love you.
Oh, that's so sweet to say that. Really?
Yeah, they do.
Oh, thank you.
They do. Let's go back to the phones. We'll go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah.
First of all, George, I just want to say you are an incredible host. This is a great show. This is the only reason why I ever listen to AM radio.
Well, thank you.
Oh, not a problem. Second of all, Aaron, I agree with everything you've had to say tonight so far. And I'm only 24, and I just realized, like, a few months that all this stuff is actually going on, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers, and everything.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned earlier something about how if the government wants to at any time, they could take you into jail and never be heard from again. Are you worried at all about yourself for making this movie and for doing all the promotion for it?
No. No,
why not?
I'm not worried because I made a decision when I made this movie that I look forward. I don't, you know, if I had to look behind my back and worry about everything, then I couldn't proceed to do what I do. So I've just taken the position that I'm just going to move forward, do what I do, and come what may, you know. I don't think about those things. I don't worry about those things, you know. People tell me, Aaron, don't fly, don't do this, don't do that, you know. But the truth is I couldn't function that way, and then they win, mm-hmm. you know. So the only way I'm going to win, or we're going to win together, is to just move forward, not worry about their nonsense, you know, not let them intimidate us, and
right.
make sure we get our country back. And if people are going to live in fear, then we're never going to win. And I refuse to live in fear because I'm not going to be subjected to these thieves and crooks that are running our government, that are running the banking industry today, because that's what they are. They don't care about the people of this country. They don't care at all about us. We're just production to them, you know.
We're their drones.
Right. We're their drones. Yeah, we're their hamsters. They don't care about us.
Well,
until we get people in our government that care about us, that are sincere, that want to do the right thing, bring our freedoms back to us, make America a country where the people are once more sovereign over their own lives and sovereign over their government, I will not rest until we accomplish that. And I will call a spade a spade. And the people in our government and in the Federal Reserve System are a bunch of thieves. They're no damn good. And we have to do something to take our country back. And that's the bottom line. And that's why I keep saying, please go to my website and sign up. Let's all work together and take our country back, because we can do that. We have the numbers. You know, let's do what Gandhi did, what Martin Luther King did. Let's take our country back, because we can do it.
I have one more question real quick. I've been researching a lot about into gold because I've been investing a little bit into it.
Right.
And I've noticed that our country has been spending more money than we're making. And each year the Americans compile up a debt of like $400 billion.
More than that.
Okay. Well, if we do actually uprise and we were actually successful at eliminating them and all the thieving and profit-taking that they're making, couldn't they weaken our dollar?
Our dollar is already – we already don't have a dollar. Don't you understand?
I understand.
The dollar we have is just a piece of paper. You can't make it any less weak than that. All it is a piece of paper with – it's no different than Monopoly money.
But isn't that every other country nowadays?
What's that?
Isn't that every other country nowadays?
Yes, exactly. That's the point. So what America can do is have the government start making the money backed by the gold that we have somewhere and take it away from the Federal Reserve, so we have a gold and silver-backed dollar that has a real intrinsic value to it, and then have a real currency. And that's what we should be doing in this country.
Okay.
And we don't need the Federal Reserve to make fiat money. A 10-year-old kid can make money out of nothing. All you got to do is sit on a computer.
Is the gold still at Fort Knox, by the way?
No, it's not. I can't speak with complete authority about that. But from my understanding, from my conversations with people that I know that know a lot about this on both sides of the fence, The gold has been moved. A lot of it's in New York, the Federal Reserve Bank in New York, under Citigroup, and it's not at Fort Knox anymore. It's not under the control of the Treasury anymore. It's under the control of the Federal Reserve System. They list it on their books, and they've taken the gold as collateral for the dollars they print. The Federal Reserve has no reason to hold the American people's gold. It's a private bank. It's a cartel of banks. And we don't even know who owns the voting stock in that bank. Okay?
Jeez.
And they've never been audited.
Never?
Never been audited.
Unbelievable. Wildcard line, you're up. Hi there.
Hi, yes. This is Jim in Kansas City.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, listen, great show. I just love you, George. I'm wide awake now.
Thank you,
Aaron,
James.
I watched your movie here in Kansas City, and it was great.
Thank you.
We had a standing room only. Applause and everything. You had the ex-IRS agents in there, too. That was great. And a lot of them. I mean, but what I wanted to tell you, too, is you were talking about it going worldwide.
Yeah.
Well, I just got an email while I was sitting here waiting to get on the phone, and it says, it's time to start this. This is from Australia. And it says, it's time to start meeting in the streets outside the courthouses and the halls and then across the nations. And we now getting the help with a guy named Aaron Russo, a one man, a Hollywood film director, and he's finally come forward to bring our message to the world on a scale never seen before.
Oh, that's very sweet. I don't know who sent that.
It was a guy named John Wilson from Australia.
I don't know, John, but I'm glad that it's getting around. It seems to be getting around. And
I sent it out to 50. George, I'm helping you, too, because I sent it out to 50 of my people to be sure to listen in on your show tonight.
I got a copy of that. It came back to me.
What we have to do is get, you know, millions of people behind what we're trying to do and lead this country back to freedom. And
I signed up for your website, too.
Thank you for signing up. That's very important.
I've already
important.
Got an email back from you, a response, auto response back from it. So the one question I wanted to ask you, and that was, has it destroyed your family like it did mine when you wake up to it and then you tell them, hey, listen, look, the king has no clothes on, and they go, are you crazy?
No, it's not. My family understands what's happening in this country.
Oh.
And
so they're supportive of you.
Well, no, not necessarily.
Oh, really?
They understand what's happening. They may not necessarily want me to be a part of it, you know, to fight. But that's just who I am, and they understand that's who I am, and nothing's going to stop that. This, you know, we're on this earth, and we're on this earth to serve a duty, and my duty is to serve the people of this country, and I'm going to do my very best to bring honesty and decency and integrity back to our government.
We're a benevolent country, Aaron. We do help a lot of other countries in distress. The people in the United States are caring humans.
Absolutely.
And why is it, then, that so many around this planet hate us?
Because of our government. Because our government is arrogant. They think that we control everything. They try to tell people that we're a democracy, and they're trying to spread democracy around the world. Well, let me tell you something. America is not supposed to be a democracy, okay? You know, in a democracy, 51% of the people control 49%. That's not freedom. If you're part of the 49%, you're not a free person. The word democracy is not written into the Constitution one time.
Not at all.
Or the Declaration one time, or the Bill of Rights one time. America is a constitutional republic. And in our republic, as it was formed, 99% of the people can't take away the rights of 1%. They're your God-given inherent rights as a human being. You have them because you were born. In a democracy, government controls you. The majority controls. And they fix the machines so that when you vote, the majority votes the way they want them to vote.
All right, say it, Aaron. Say you're as mad as hell. You're not going to take it anymore.
That's for sure. Yeah, but I'm not as mad as I used to be. Now I'm much more even about
it. Why? You getting mellow?
I'm much more even-tempered. Because I knew when I was really angry, I was so angry, I couldn't make my points clearly. Now I can look at what's happening and discuss it in a more even-tempered way and make more sense to more people.
Were you that angry? Were you, you argued with people?
I was so angry. When I first started to understand what was happening in this country, I was so disappointed. I was so angry. I was so upset. I couldn't stand it. I was in agony. I was in pain when I was.
I bet you couldn't even carry on a conversation with people without screaming.
It's the truth. They hate, and people didn't want to be around me. It's like we talk about, you know. And I would talk about it with this venom. You know, look what they're doing, you know. And now I have the same attitude, but now at least I can talk about it in an intelligent way. I mean, the movie I just made deals with what's happening in a more level-headed manner than the old Mad as Hell video that I made, you know.
First-time caller line, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hi, my name's Kevin. I'm calling from Hollywood, Florida.
Hi, Kevin.
I'm going to be really succinct. Aaron, I definitely honor you. I appreciate what you've done. But the one thing I want to know, I went to We the People website. I don't see no information on how to get this, how to get your film down here in the Hollywood, Fort Lauderdale, Miami area.
Wrong website for that, wasn't
it? Well, I'm not on the We the People website. My website's freedomtofascism.com.
Oh, okay. I didn't know you had one.
Yeah. So you go to that one, you'll find out.
Well, no, but let me just say, right now, the screenings are coming to it. The pre-screenings are now coming to a close because we're going to be opening up the movie on a regular release come July.
How many screens did you get, Aaron?
We did around 25.
around the country. And we did some in Florida, in Tampa, I believe. No, in Tampa for sure. And the theater owners are now saying we have to stop the pre-screenings because we're going to open the movie in the theaters now, and they don't want any more of those screenings being done. So we're going to come to, I think June 15th, they're going to come to a stop.
But you're going to be in the big theaters, then?
Yeah, well, then we're going to go into the theaters, on a regular film release.
So just follow and monitor the website to find out if it's near a theater close to home?
Yeah, we'll be announcing all the theaters that we're opening in and where we're traveling to and what theaters we're opening up week after week, for sure.
Okay, there you go, Kevin. Next up, let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, hi, George.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just got to compliment you. This is a fantastic program. Freedom from fascism is what we have to start concerning ourselves with now. It's so prevalent. I'm calling you from Lake Havasu, Arizona, but I also reside in Fontana.
Uh-huh.
We've been taken over by fascists.
Yes, we have. But the website is Freedom to Fascism.
Yeah, Freedom to Fascism.
Right, exactly.
And I wanted to tell you, Aaron, that I want to join. I gave them the numbers, so call me. But, yeah, I definitely want to join because I'm mad as hell, too.
Well, did you go on the website and sign up?
I'll do that tomorrow from a library.
Yeah, go to the website, sign up, and there'll be a place where you can just sign up and leave contact information. And then as we start organizing to make the changes we want to make, I can notify everybody very quickly if everybody signs up and stay in touch with everybody.
Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, when you get back, you'll have to call me, too. I wanted to say that it was so profound when you talked about Building 7 coming down and that it was pulled. That I was always thought something like that happened. And actually, I can tell you now, and George, you might want to mention this when you go to Washington, but the real alert status before 9/11 happened after Flight 800. I was involved with projects that dealt with taking down enemy aircraft a long time before that, and when Flight 800 happened, I went off on the FAA and informed them this looks like a terrorist attack.
I think you were right.
And spent a lot of time then with the FAA and the CIA harassing me because I alerted them to the fact that this looked like a terrorist attack.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Peter Lance writes that Ramzi Youssef and those boys were a part of it, even though Youssef was in jail at the time, and that, they brought it down with a little Casio watch bomb.
Right, exactly. I heard that from your show, too, and yeah. I finally realized that that's how it occurred. At first, I thought, because of the project I was in, that it was taken down by a missile. And I realize now it was taken down.
We've never had a 747 go down with the arcing spark that they said took down 800.
Well, what's so funny is that this, I've never heard the CIA do anything as ridiculous as coming out and portraying that they said that it was spark. If you look at all the logistics and the thermodynamics of the situation, that just doesn't pay. It just doesn't play at all.
No,
that was
I agree with that, Steve.
Story by the CIA because they way back then.
Well, you know what that would have done to the aviation industry if they said that a terrorist knocked one of our planes out of the sky, and they couldn't have it, and that's sad. And that's part of it, Aaron. Well, we just don't get the truth.
Well, that's why we don't believe anything the government says anymore. And that's part of the sadness of the situation we're in. You can't believe anything. And now they're trying to shut down the Internet. You know, the only bastion we get of truth in this country.
Remember Jack Nicholson said in that movie, you can't handle the truth.
Yeah, I love Jackie.
I think we can handle the truth.
I know we can. I know we can. I'm out there spreading it and people want to hear it. That's all I can tell you. They want to hear it. They're desperate. They're starving for the truth.
Might be able to get one or two more in. Wildcard line, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
You mentioned We the People. You're familiar with a book by Lynn Meredith called Vultures in Eagles Clothing. It tells people about how to not pay taxes legally. There are ways of doing it, apparently.
Well, I've never read the book, but I know of it.
Well, apparently there are copies of form letters in there written by the IRS to individuals that explain to them that They are not required to pay taxes. I had a very dear friend of mine that used to be the lead investigator of the Adam Walsh murder trial down in Florida that was trying to help people do this. And he basically told me the Constitution does say that there are people that are required to pay taxes. Basically, you have to work for the federal government or be involved in the manufacture of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms or live within 10 miles of Washington, D.C.
You mean to be a federal citizen you're talking about?
So he had started me on this process, and I had done a Freedom of Information Act request on who they thought I was, and it came back, and I still have a copy of all this. It says that I am an IRS employee.
Right.
I mean, I'd love to know how to go out and get my retirement benefits or something, but I never followed up on it because I had moved to a different county. And but it was absolutely incredible because apparently the next step on this is that you get some type of an interview in an IRS office and you bring them the Freedom of Information Act request, the paperwork.
Yeah, but you see, from my point of view, all that is not necessary because from my point of view, this thing was settled many years ago. The Supreme Court said they can't tax the labor of the people, and that's it. I don't think you have to deal with the code. I don't think that's necessary because the IRS claims they get their authorization from the 16th Amendment, which was 1913.
You know, wouldn't it be nice to be able to give us 100% use of our money, and then I wouldn't mind paying a higher sales tax.
Well, I understand. I mean, there are many ways, but you see, the truth of the matter is that you know the government can make whatever money it wants. Doesn't need taxation.
That's true. The way they're doing it now, they're just going roll the wheelbarrow back in.
Exactly. So it's not. You don't need taxes to run the government.
Aaron, we are out of time, my friend.
Oh,
but when you
so
get back from
that.
Paris, let's keep in touch. We're both out here in L.A. We'll get together, okay?
Oh, I'd love to see you. I'd love to have lunch, talk to you. I tell you, I was saying 3 hours. It's a long time. It went by like it was 10 minutes.
Absolutely, Aaron. You take care. Have a good time in Paris with your film.
Thank you so much, and God bless.
His website is linked up with his name at coasttocoastam.com. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Ian Punnett, Ross Mitchell, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition with a program originating out of the cave in St. Louis. Until then, be safe, everyone.